Thank you. I understand that Chair Callanan and Vice Chair Caldy will be unable to attend tonight's meeting due to work conflicts. As written in our board's and commission's handbook, we will need to take a vote to excuse a member's absence from a meeting, and this must be recorded in the meeting minutes. If I can ask for a motion to excuse Chair Callanan and Vice Chair Caldy from tonight's meeting. Is there a motion? All right, is there a second for that motion?
I'll second that.
All right, thank you. I'll ask if there is any public comment on this motion. Please raise your hand.
There's no public comment on this item, Commissioner Aguilar.
All right, thank you. I will ask for a vote on this motion.
Commissioner Aguilar?
Yes.
Commissioner Rodkey?
Aye.
Commissioner Jordan?
All right, thank you. That motion passes. We have excused our chair and vice chair. May I please have a roll call of attendance?
Yes. Commissioner Aguilar?
Present.
Commissioner Rodkey?
Present.
Present.
All right, thank you for that. Now I'd like to move on to the public forum section of this agenda at this time. Any member of the public may speak or comment on any non-agenda item relevant to the jurisdiction of this commission. Is there any public comment at this time?
There is none.
All right, thank you for that. Now I'd like to ask our staff if there are any amendments or adjustments to tonight's agenda.
Thank you, Commissioner Aguilar. Good evening, everyone. I do have a recommendation for an adjustment to the agenda. I recommend rescheduling item C1, the election of chair and vice chair, to our next commission meeting scheduled for April.
All right, that's good with me.
And I'd also like to take this opportunity to welcome aboard our two new commissioners, Commissioner Anna Jordan and Commissioner Krista Rodkey. This is a very exciting time for our library. We have a very substantive presentation ahead of us this evening. We're very grateful for your time and commitment to this commission, and we look forward to having you on board. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do we have...
Additionally, Commissioner Aguilar, we recommend that because the vice chair and chair are not here, to push the meeting minutes to the next Library Advisory Commission meeting in April.
All right.
And that will be all for amendments and adjustments.
Okay. Thank you for that. All right. Well, I say we get started with our second section, our presentation. We have item B1. Update on the Goleta Valley Library ADA Safety and Building Improvement Project.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Matt Fohr. I'm the General Services Director for the City of Goleta. General Services is in charge of, one of the things we're in charge of is facilities. facilities maintenance and also larger capital projects like the remodel project that we've been planning that you'll hear about this evening. Just by way of background, in October of 2023, the city applied for and received a fairly sizable grant, a $4.2 million grant from the state librarian office. And the city matched that grant with $1 million of its own proceeds. Also really valuable, the Friends of the Library also contributed $250,000 toward the remodel of the restrooms, which is just fantastic. This grant is infrastructural in nature. You know, when you apply for grants, grants can do any number of things, programming or, you know, strategic planning or things like that. This is really about the facility itself. And it's great because it's uncommon that we get this kind of grant where every single penny goes toward the infrastructure itself. So this 52 or 53-year-old building has been heavily used in very good ways, right? And so what we're hoping is that at the end of this project, we can hand back to you a facility that can last another 50 years that can then accommodate every strategic plan that you have, the fun stuff, the whimsical things, all the really innovative programming that you want to bring. And so so we're very excited about this. The scope of the grant, it does a number of things, again, related to the facility itself. We'll make Americans with Disabilities Act accessibility improvements to the restrooms, to the path of travel from the, even from the parking lot or from Fairview up to the front entrances. We're gonna modernize and replace the aging HVAC system. And it's one of the, you know, this is the cooling center, the city cooling center on the north side of the city. We will install life safety and security installations and upgrades, LED lighting retrofits to make the building, the lighting better, but also more efficient. Make door and window replacements and upgrades. And finally, the fascia, the face of the building and the exterior paint. We will give you a very aesthetically pleasing, lovely building back. And so in May of 2024, the city did a procurement process and we hired Jeffrey Miller Architectural and Design. And Jeffrey Miller is here tonight to go into greater detail of the design, what we've been working on furiously for the last several months. From a construction standpoint, this is a tight timeline. We have until June of 2027 to finish all the design, all the construction, and close out the project and give the building back. And so in the construction world, that's very rapid. It's possible, but it's very rapid. So what you'll hear tonight is the product of a lot of design work, a lot of decisions, a lot of really intense work to get us through design and get us onto construction. And so with that, I'll hand it over to Jeffrey Miller.
All right, thank you. I'm happy to be here and what a joy to work on this project. I think that the first time that we actually showed up to the library, somebody had a I Heart Goleta Library bumper sticker. And one of our project team members has actually grew up here and has had like shared some really great stories about the library, and it seems like such a fantastic community asset. So very honored to play a part in helping give this building a second life. And so as Matt noted, the project goals are pretty focused on these seven buckets of the American Disabilities Act upgrades, which on its face is unlike other building codes, the American Disabilities Act is rooted in discrimination. And so to make it more accessible is to make it also more inclusive. And this includes the restrooms, which are being modernized and enlarged so that they fit the, meet the current standards for clearances, wheelchair turnarounds. We are updating all the restrooms, which also had, there was a little bit of a shortfall with current codes. We are adding one more in. There's upgrades to the safety and security systems make sure the building is more secure for the public, that we have better eyes on it, updated equipment in there, and that it's being actively monitored. We are updating the electrical system in toto, and so that the we'll have all new panels. They're past their service life, and so it's time to put a new service in. And in that expansion, we're making room for future solar and other things that may go in the future. The modernization of the ceiling is going to make the space feel a little bit brighter, a little bit more open. We are respecting the initial architecture of the building, which is really good. It's a really handsome building, and it's really well built. As noted by, it's been 50 years before it's even needed an update. So it is time for it, but we are trying to be considerate of the existing. The door and window replacements will also be going in, and these are going to be thermally broken insulated glass units. So again, it's going to have another uptick in the energy performance, which will lower the operating cost over time. And then fascia repair and the exterior paint to give it a little facelift on the outside too, as all buildings need to be maintained. So just more routine maintenance on that section. So looking around on the floor plan, these items are numbered so that they correlate with the design implementation. So how we're moving through those seven goals, starting in the bottom left where the bike racks are, there's currently a walled off area that it just is really kind of a space that's very underutilized. The slabs at too much of an angle to be accessible, so we're correcting that, bringing those walls down to have better visibility into the library and open that corner up a little bit. But that's really the only like major revision that's going to be on the outside. The rest of it is paint upgrades and glass. The dedicated Friends of the Library space, there was some existing program in there for a kitchen and an AV room, which just says technology has evolved. We no longer need that amount of AV space. And so we are using that area to provide a more secure and dedicated area for the Friends of the Library. The accessible entrances and the automatic doors, both main entrances, actually all the doors on the exterior, all the glass doors are going to be replaced with new doors. The ones into the exterior are biparting sliding doors so that we don't have the they'll be automatic, and we're going to design out the ability for these things to bump into people or to trap people inside of that alcove where it goes in. The upgraded windows we already touched on. They're new, energy compliant with the current Title 24, looking at different types of glass, and that it will improve the energy performance and then also help with the solar control going inside of the library so that we're not bringing in too much light that's going to damage books or other items inside there. And then the emergency exit, we're adding a new one. There was a little bit of a, not quite a dead-end corridor, but the left side of the building had to egress through the lobby and could be a little bit challenging and limiting in future furniture arrangements. And so by adding this door into the left, we are putting in a new exit that makes it a little bit safer, a little bit easier to get out of the building in an emergency. Modernizing accessible restrooms, as the code has progressed, they've gotten more restrictive on the water usage. They've gotten more restrictive on, per flush, our sensor faucets and such. There's also a bunch of small things in there, like the mirrors are slightly too high or the stalls are slightly too narrow. So in the redesign, we've accounted for all these clearances and a fixture count that's more appropriate by code to the space and the use of it. So those are being revised. We were able to do it without significant modification to the structure so that we're not doing getting into seismic analysis or doing anything so substantial to the structure that we need to do any kind of reinforcing or things at this point. And then the electrical and utility room, the room was located towards the interior of the space, which is probably not the highest and best use for that area. It kind of occupied a really important corner, we felt like. And in the replacement of the equipment, we are moving everything to the exterior of the building, which is what would be currently required if we were working with a new utility company. They have a requirement for exterior access direct into the building, which where we're moving it uses an existing door to take advantage of that. And then we have a more contiguous and regularly shaped room that will more efficiently fit the equipment inside of it. Oh, sorry.
Thank you. So I wanted just to take a moment here first to recognize the really significant range and scope of improvements that we are looking forward to at the library. These truly, as Mr. Forrest said, are the kind of things that this opportunity doesn't come around often to be able to really dive into infrastructure needs and to support the facility's ability to really sustain the library service needs and interests of the community for our next 50 years. And so we're very grateful for this opportunity and all of the skilled experts who have dedicated their time and talents to bringing these plans to life. With that, it would be remiss of us not to acknowledge that there is one point in particular we wanted to just take a moment to address. You'll see on the floor plan before us, number 8 is a rededication of the Boisel Children's Story Room. For anyone who's familiar with our library, who may have been to the Boisel Room, this space was dedicated in 2019. We had a ribbon cutting for this space dedicated in memory of Jake Boisel in partnership with our friends of the library and the Boisel family. That this was a memorial space for Jake Boisel, who was a child who unfortunately lost his life in a bike accident on his way to school in 2006. And so this is a very dear space in our library. And with a lot of these improvements, you can hear from the conversation from the project team that this has really opened up a series of regulatory and very much, code type of criteria that have begun to become requirements. Once you begin a certain type of work, there becomes a need to follow requirements and statutes and codes and laws. And so with that, and looking at bringing our building fully up to codes in other areas, we will be rededicating the Boisel space. It will no longer be in the exact footprint that it is in the library. We worked closely with the Friends of the Library and the Boisel family as soon as we knew that this change was unavoidable. Options were explored thoroughly thanks to the efforts of our design team, and it was determined that there weren't any feasible alternatives to this outcome. And so we did work very closely with the Boisel family, and we communicated the rededication of the space with them. And our plan forward is to create a new space that's in the center of the library, where it can continue to honor the memory of Jake Boisel, his love of reading. They'll be working closely with the Boisel family to identify furnishings to really make sure that it honors that continued dedication to his spirit. And so we wanted to just to call out the full scope of the project, and for this particular change, we wanted to share that we understand the importance of this space, and we're certainly taking that into consideration moving forward in the scope of the overall design. So I'll turn it back over to Jeff, but thank you for letting me step in and touch on that important piece.
Thank you. So just to go a little bit further into the ADA compliance and where the modifications are requiring us to do work. We are, like we said, we have very limited focus on where this grant can be applied. And so as the ADA path of travel is one of the biggest priorities, you have to be able to get into the building. So starting with the parking and some non-conforming slopes, those are being corrected, and we were able to sandwich it in between two islands to add a new island on the left, so that we are not regrading the entirety of the parking lot. It's being isolated with new landscaping, and then that area will be regraded to the conforming codes and will be accessible at the drop-off. There's a new curb cut that's going in to get us to the front door. And then once inside the front door, the accessible route is essentially all areas of the library, but all parts of it will be compliant with current code. And just to touch on that, the code evolves every 3 years and becomes more and more restrictive. So it's not that the building was deficient or that the building was poorly designed. It's just the code has become more restrictive. So we're bringing it to modernization to comply with our current standards. We got the exits and entrances we already touched on. The ADA men's room, there's kind of a lot in the code, everything from coat hooks to turning spaces and how we go through those. So this was an opportunity for us to improve the restroom facilities inside of it. We're going with ceiling-mounted partitions for cleaning. Like, it's been a really good opportunity to bring things up, and as materials have evolved, also use newer, more resilient materials with the corrections of the HVAC system. There'll be better ventilation in there. and help with odor control as well. And then the path travel, all the door thresholds, there's just like little minor things on those about bringing those into so that the amplitude of the abrupt surface changes within a tolerance that a wheelchair can get over. Ah, there we go, lighting and security. Okay, so going through the lighting system, we have in-progress photometrics to make sure that we're bringing everything up to the current illuminations that reduces eye strain for the readers in the library. So making sure we're getting to 50-foot candles and all the reading surfaces and meeting our code compliance for exiting on all of our exit paths. So there's other regulations that govern those, and then there's just standards and best practices. And so with the activities that are in there, we're using a more efficient lighting engine of an LED versus the fluorescent bulbs that are in there now, which will pay out an operational cost. And then there's also just a more sophisticated control system so that lights aren't accidentally left on, or there's ways to mitigate the energy usage to make sure that we're keeping the building running efficiently. We are around the perimeter in the circulation zone. We have a series of can lights to help highlight and make the circulation through the library intuitive. And then in the main spaces, the main volumes of the building are very generous and very well proportioned. And so we didn't want to fiddle with that too much and tried to go back with the modern version of essentially what was there previously. So there's currently the 8-crate wood ceiling that's in the space with the lights above it. So there's a modern product made by Armstrong, which will help with the acoustic control inside of the space. So it's like a felt waffle kind of. So it's in a way the same. That's probably a horrible description of it. You think of something more poetic later. But it's a grid of a crate, but made out of a material that helps with acoustics. So a more modern version of what's out there. And then the lights are dropping down in between it so that we're not getting the shadows that were previously cast from having the lights above as they come down. So a cleaner light that will come down through the ceiling, and then we are using that to hide all of the mechanical above so that we don't see the ducts and registers. So it should be a very clean design at the end of it. And what did I ceiling design? We are adding a sprinkler system in, which has been interesting to coordinate. We're trying to find like a good place to put it and have at the backflow preventer and how to get all these parts and pieces into the building and it's always difficult in a retrofit because it wasn't designed to host these things. And so how do we put these new systems in without ending up with some pipe stuck on the outside of the building or something that's in an unsightly area? And so the team has been working collaboratively. We have a really, really, really good team on this project that the way that our coordination has been happening, we're very aware of all the pieces that need to go in so that we're not surprised by something in construction. So there'll be a new fire line going in with a new sprinkler system. We're putting in a new security system that will have cameras to provide better visibility on the around the property, not just inside the building, but around the entrance and to the sites and to the field to the north, so that we have in conjunction with the lighting system, which is going to brighten up the outside of the building locally underneath the soffit. There's also better eyes on there now to create a safer space around the building. And then all the windows and things will include normal glass break sensors, door contacts for alarms, and this sort. Okay, so here's an interior rendering of what we're talking with our beautiful felt waffle at the top. And so this is a white box rendering. There's no, the reason that it's not representative of the materials palette. We're just still working through our design process and working on what those materials are. So had a very productive meeting with the city today and discussion of some of those materials, but just for the purposes of this rendering, it's intentionally has no color in it. We're not that boring. That's just what we wanted to communicate, what the quality of the space is and the quality of the volume is gonna be. You'll also notice there's no furniture modeled. We're still in design, so as those things progress, they'll be added into the model. So we could also check the security angles for stacks and make sure that we have coverage and people aren't, there's not a lot of places to get into trouble out of sight. So this one's looking at the children's area, which we're still working on lighting, and then the adults area, and the new exit door is going to essentially look like one of the windows before, but we'll have an exit sign and a panic bar across it, and that will pretty much be the only like delineation that it's actually a door. But again, we'll look similar in the same vocabulary of the windows that are out there now as these punched openings out to the space and out to the street. You can see where we're bringing down our lights in between the cells so that we're not casting shadows, and the perimeter lights that are highlighted in the circulation give us like a nice scalloped pattern that gives some motion on the walls. On the outside, you can see the before picture on the top right and the after picture bottom. Ostensibly, just and especially given the limited scope of this project, we're not trying to make a new library, and we're not trying to give it a major facelift. It's a good building. We're just trying to give it another extend its life for another 50 years. So the area that you'll notice is the most different is the wall that went along the left where the 500 is. There used to be a wall there that kind of closed off that patio, and it wasn't a very useful space and wasn't activated. So in bringing that wall down, we're making space for additional bike racks out there, as well as a slightly better location for the book drops, so that they're not as so they don't feel as in the way or as an afterthought. The second initiative on that is also, as we've been at the library and noticed the amount of carts, 40 carts that are moving around constantly, we've also made everything flattish. So there's no steps on any of the paths of travels for the librarians. So they also have an easier time moving carts around and getting books back to where they're supposed to be. And then the last rendering is looking up towards the library from the street view. So you can see, again, the area where the wall used to be is right up the sidewalk where the landscaping is. But for all intents and purposes, the building will look largely as it did before, which is our goal. Thank you. Should I stay for questions or? All right.
All right, thank you for that update. I'll ask if there's any questions from my fellow commissioners.
First I'll say thank you so much for saying things about, you know, how this building is well designed and how you are not trying to do anything dramatic. I appreciate that. I'm a lifelong, you know, Goleta Library user, and I think it is a really splendid building, so I'm glad you're honoring that vision. One thing I kind of have a question about is with the LED retrofit of the lighting. I mean, you say, well, we're improving it, we're going in keeping with best practices, and I want to kind of say, I know that there are people who are on the autism spectrum or high sensitivity people who, like me, prefer a kind of darker thing, that it's kind of cozy, it's sort of restful, so that even though, you know, you might want to have bright light for reading books off the page, there's a kind of comforting feeling to have the lower light levels. So I'm wondering if, is there a way to accommodate still some of that?
One thousand percent. And this is one of the reasons that we have a variety of lights, and that and when you look at the reflected ceiling plan, there's troffers, there's cans, there's cove lights, and a lot of that is to improve the quality of light in the space. Bright spaces feel bright when their surfaces are lit. So we're using the cove light that goes around the perimeter of the ceiling to make the ceiling feel bright and make the space feel bright, but it's not going to give that much light on the working surface. The circulation lighting that goes around provides like a nice accent to it, but we'll throw a light down. The reason we're using that specific light is that it throws a light down at the walking surface, but is targeted and isn't spilling light in a lot of other areas. So that's a much more targeted fixture. And then there's going to be task lighting that will be partially with a furniture solution, but we're only bringing bright light down in specific areas where, and it's, again, with these down lights that can be aimed and gimbaled so that they're lighting the surface, but not creating like an obnoxious level of light inside the space. Secondly, the lighting controls are also getting updated. So all the lights are 0 to 10 volt dimmable, so that the light that you need inside the library at 2 o'clock in the afternoon is very different than the light that you need at 8 p.m. And so the system should also be able to respond to that. We are trying to use, this isn't like, we're still looking for them, but there's also, we're trying to get tunable white fixtures in there so that we can also change, like the color, the temperature of the light that we're in right now is about 3,500 degrees. It's very good for being awake and keeping people alert, but kind of washes things out. It's not the most flattering of light. So with a tunable white light, we're able to change that and kind of make it the light a little bit rosier and the light a little mm-hmm. bit. So as the different events happen in the library, we also want the lighting to respond to that so that it's mm-hmm. not just a one size fits all thing where it's an off on. We are putting like a lot of design into the lighting system because it's lighting really makes breaks a project. And it's mm-hmm. it's one of the things that you know, we're very sensitive to because it is something that can really, you know, if you're sitting somewhere and you've got a light shining in your eyes or you've got glare coming from a light, it doesn't matter what the architecture looks like. It's the, you know, if the room's uncomfortably hot, uncomfortably bright, you're still mad at the architect. So like we're very aware and working on that one.
So, sorry. So you said there's kind of like a computer automated thing, but then there's also kind of an individual customizability that mm-hmm. can be controlled manually by like the librarians.
Correct. So they'll have a lighting control panel. And there's also plugs into like there's like a million ways to do it, but they'll have a lighting control panel where they control the fixtures individually, and you can set scenes. And so most likely what, you know, in the commissioning of the lighting system, we'll set up the scene control, and it can always be adjusted, but then it'll just be like 7 buttons where you have like scene A, B, C, D. And then it will, you can fine tune the lighting, but we'll likely just leave it on like a scene control system, and that has it either on a timer or by manual override, but there'll be a big lighting control panel in the workroom.
Thanks. All right, thank you for that question. Is there any other questions at this time? I'll ask hopefully a brief question. So I can see in our rendering, you know, we have generally the focus on the design of the space, and we haven't got into the furniture specifics yet. I'm wondering, and this might not be a question for you, maybe it's for our city librarian, if there's going to be more, are there specific updates to furniture or maybe the way the stacks are used or stack design for our materials that we should look forward to?
Thank you. That's an excellent question. So with the scope of the grant funds and the funds associated with the Building Forward project, these are specifically usable for infrastructure. And so in looking at the renderings and in discussing the usage of the space, we definitely have a lot of dreams about what an opportunity this is to make other updates. The funding that's identified for this project is specifically for infrastructure improvement, and so this project funding wouldn't allow for those funds to be spent on some of those public items like shelving and furnishings. However, we are looking to identify funding sources. We have had a couple of generous donors reach out to us recently and hearing about the project and wanting to see if there is a way for them to support some of those very public items as well. And one space in particular, and I'll see if our director, Ms. Plummer, would like to speak to this, is that we do have an update occurring in the workroom area. And so we do have one area there where we identified that because of some of the changes to the ADA accessibility improvements in the adult restrooms, our workroom area is one of the walls is moving in. And so our current furniture, which we believe is the original desks from the 70s, it will no longer physically fit in the space. And so that's an opportunity for us to update furniture. But I'll turn it over to Ms. Plummer for elaboration.
Yes, thank you, Mrs. Saucedo. As your city librarian described, we have a very long wish list of furnishings that would go in this bright, new, refreshed space. We are looking under every tree, inside every couch cushion to see what we can find. As Mrs. Saucedo had shared earlier, we did receive a generous donation that is allowing us to purchase our workroom stations for our staff. And fortunately, it's allowing us to purchase those in time for our transition to our temporary site. So staff will be using the new furnishings that will then be moved back to the library in their new home. So we are continuing to look for other donors or sponsorships. One of the redesignation of the Boyzell space and the rededication, as it was mentioned earlier, it's such a special space, and we'll be looking to see if we can identify some supporters to help find some great creative furnishings that can be fantastic in the designated space that we have, that can encourage creativity, provide the quiet space for a child that just wants to be left alone a little bit, as well as being alone but being with others at the same time. So there's a lot of great furniture out there. From time to time, we start looking in catalogs and get really excited and go shopping with our Monopoly money. But we are looking for any company or organization or even individual that wants to provide funding towards new furnishings. We have 2 years about a year and a half to raise the money to then purchase the furniture so it can be in place when we reopen. And, you know, if that could happen, maybe we would have a big sale of some iconic furniture from the original library. So stay tuned for that.
All right. Thank you. That answers my question. I'll ask if there's any questions from the public at this time on this update.
Yes, Commissioner Aguilar, there is one member of the public wishing to speak. If there's any members of the public wishing to speak, please use the raise your hand icon and I will call on you. Currently, Eric Rodkey is wanting to speak. If you could please unmute yourself, and you will have 3 minutes starting now. Eric Rodkey?
Hello. So can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I'm delighted to, I want to echo what was said about the appreciation of the library design. I think that, you know, of course, it's a beloved building and we're all anxious to see it updated with respect to its fine features and the warmth that the wood and everything like that. I'm also happy to hear you mention color temperature. That was one of my questions as a cinematographer. I work with a lot of LED lighting, and I know LED lighting is not all made equally. So unfortunately, a lot of LED lighting on the cheaper end has given LED lighting as a whole a bit of a bad name for often being blue, flickery, and harsh. So, which in technical terms are just like a too cold color temperature. And then the flickering is kind of a refresh rate or control chip problem, and the overbright or the glary or is kind of a matter of diffusion and design. So I'm just, if you, are there any other, you know, I know you mentioned being able to control the color temperature, and I just want to put my 2 cents in there that I've rarely seen a light fixture go in and think they made that too warm, but I've often seen a light fixture, you know, swapping tungsten for LED and going, you know, like the Arlington lights are for some reason blue now, and they're supposed to be like candlelight, but I've never seen a candle burn blue. So I just wanted to raise that note, and you've already hinted at it, so it may be a somewhat redundant note. But I also want to echo the the idea of lighting as ambient, and one of the things that I love about the lighting as it is currently is that the sense is almost of the lighting coming more from the windows than from the ceiling. So there's this sense that you are in a space with light rather than that you are in a lit up space. I don't know if that's entirely a question. More a public comment, I guess.
Should I respond?
Yeah, please.
Oh, okay. Yes, absolutely. and very much agree with you. Not all lights are created equal. And so we have, in the fixture schedule that we have, we've gone through and selected all the lights, and these are all brands that I've used before successfully on projects. That being said, there's always the opportunity for a contractor to make a substitution. So we also have performance requirements in the specifications of the project to identify a minimum CRI, color rendering index, so that we don't, another pet peeve of mine is that is there's the blue flickering, but if you get cheap lights, they're all different temperature. And so we want it to also be not to detract from the volumes inside of the spaces of the adult reading area and the children's reading area, I think are really sophisticated, and it's a really comfortable volume. The buildings are two perfect squares that are pushed next to each other, and I think it's a 1:1.6 ratio for the ceiling height, which creates a very pleasant room. And don't want it to be like the flickering, the lights that are different temperatures. We're managing that by having performance standards inside of our project as well, so that even if there is a substitution to the lighting fixture, which sometimes there has to be, it's unavailable, there's a better deal on something, there's a million reasons where we might have to look at an alternate, which is okay, it's totally standard. We just make sure that they hit the same performance criteria as the ones that we have in the drawings.
All right, thank you for those public comments. Is there any other further public comment or question at this time?
Not at this time, Commissioner Aguilar.
All right, I'll ask if there's any further commission comment. All right, then we can move on to item B2, Goleta Valley Library City Librarians Report.
Thank you, Commissioner Aguilar, and thank you again to our project team for that incredibly thorough and exciting presentation. I think I can speak on behalf of the library team and many of our patrons when I say we're very much looking forward to seeing the project come to life. So thank you for your time this evening. And thank you to our commission for your great questions. That was a really great conversation. Thank you. So for our next item, B2, at each of our commissions, we have a section that's the City Librarian's Report. And so this captures some of the activity that's taken place at the library essentially since the last commission meeting. So one of our meetings at the end of last year was canceled, and so the data set for this particular report is a little bit longer than normal, so we'll be covering some of our highlights that occurred between September 2024 and January 2025. And so we do have all of the details in the formal staff report, and then we've also prepared a presentation to help bring to life some of the highlights of this time period. So we'll go ahead and we will dive right in. So we start with our programming, and the reason why we do that is because our programming is really a beloved part of our services, and it brings people together in a very unique way. If any of you have attended a program, you can really see sort of the magic of that community hub nature of a public library coming to life. I mean, it's very energizing for staff, too. Like, the rush of coming out of a baby story time is just like nothing else. And so this entire report will cover programming as well as a lot of statistics here and there, some grant updates, collection development, and then, of course, our programs and events. And so this particular program was from our Star Wars Day a couple of years ago, but we do a Star Wars Day annually. And so our stormtroopers and all of our characters and cosplay with their library card was just a really great photo op, so we wanted to share that. So this is a summary. We pulled out some of our highlights from September to January. And so we do have some different programs that take place on an annual basis. So we have reading incentive programs. You might recognize these as like our winter reading programs, our summer reading programs, where you can earn incentives by reading books. So it's a great way to provide, you know, a sort of an interactive way to promote literacy in the community. And in recent years, we've really made a shift to make these as all ages as possible. And so sometimes with our programming, we'll have it be very youth-centered. But then if we've opened up, like our winter reading program, we've opened up that program to adults in recent years. And it's so great to be able to say, you know, teens can participate, adults can participate, the whole family can develop that reading habit together, you can model reading for your child. It's really been fun to see those numbers grow. And there's even some great partnerships, like the In-N-Out cover-to-cover program. That one's just for ages 4 through 12, much to the disappointment of our adult patrons, myself included. But there's even companies and corporations and organizations and groups who really want to dedicate some of their own incentives and generosity to promoting reading. So we did have some very successful reading incentive programs. The numbers are pretty impressive. You know, the participation for each of those was well over 1,000. So we were really happy to see that. We also have seasonal programming. You can see in a couple of our photos up there. You know, we have passive programming such as Elf on the Shelf. We have partnership programming such as our free ice skating with your library card at Ice in Paradise here in Goleta. And then we have recurring programming that is something that we offer each week or each month, and it just maintains a very high level of activity. Our Baby and Me class and our Wiggly Storytime class sometimes have over 50 attendees total. So we'll have 30 babies in a room, or, you know, a room full of, you know, 40 toddlers and their caregivers. And so although we offer those every week, the themes and the activities do change, and we just see that really sustained high interest. And so all in all, if you look at all of the data from our programs from September to January, if you count up our outreach, our on-site, off-site programs, our passive, our active programs, those resulted in almost 11,000 interactions with our patrons. And so when we're designing our programming, we definitely try to gear it toward the interests of our community, such as book clubs. We try to bring the library out into the community. You can see our book van all dolled up for the holiday parade in Old Town, trying to really bring library services out to the community. And then listening to our patrons. You know, we had lots of requests for some time for senior-specific programming. And so we developed a senior happy hour, which is a craft program, and that our patrons come in and they ask for the calendar, they ask for the theme a month ahead of time. So we also really try to listen to what our community is interested in and design our programming accordingly. So moving on to our next overview, we do try to provide updates on our staffing. And so during this period, we welcomed 3 new team members aboard. Two in supervisory positions. So if you've been to Goleta Valley Library recently, you may have met our new branch supervisor, Kim Crail, who brings a wealth of experience and a real passion for service and team building. She started in December and she hit the ground running. She's already made a lot of progress in helping us reach our goals with our collections and filling in gaps in some of our materials, and has just really been a great leader on site during some of the transitions. We'll be touching on later in our meeting today. We also welcomed a new supervisor at our solving branch, Erin Herzog, who brings over 18 years of library experience to her role. She's worked in a variety of libraries, has a very interesting background, and she's just very people-focused, community-focused, and has some great innovative ideas for streamlining procedures and you know, bringing new sort of ideas to the forefront of the services it's solving. While still retaining, you know, as we spoke on, retaining those components of the library that are very well-known and well-loved. Whenever we have a new supervisor come aboard, I always appreciate the feeling of wanting to respect sort of the things the community already holds dear and building upon those. We've definitely seen that with Kim and Erin. We also welcomed a new library assistant, Amanda Brown, who has fantastic library experience and does a really great job of just really showcasing the customer service and the one-on-one interpersonal connection that we strive to build with our patrons. So we're very excited that we have our 3 staff members in their positions, and then we have 4 current recruitments in progress, so 1 at each of our sites. So you can see we're recruiting for a full-time library technician at our main library in Goleta. as well as a part-time library assistant at our Buellton branch and department aide, both on our book van and at Solving Library. So two of those have closed already, and I believe the other two closed this week. And we have sort of a joke with our human resources department that we need to stop making the library such a fun place to work, because we get we got over 80 applications for one of our positions. And so it's all joking aside, we love to see that the community not only loves the library, but they're also interested in being a part of that team. So we're excited to bring four new staff members to the team as well. And so this is just a snapshot. It's just truly by the numbers. I'm a big fan of data. I think storytelling is very important to really bring the library story to life, but the data is also pretty fascinating to see too. So we share this as part of our report each commission meeting. So you can see by the numbers that our activity just at our Goleta location, so just to kind of share, this isn't counting our visits at Buellton, Solving, or on the book van. So just at our Fairview location, we had 64,000 visits. We had over 3,000 computer usage sessions. Those are public computers where you can access the internet, you can do word processing, you can play games, you can check Facebook. So it's open access internet. And then we have an incredible volunteer force. We just actually had our annual volunteer appreciation breakfast last week for Goleta volunteers. And just in this time period, we had over 900 hours of volunteer support. And you can see that our open hours were 965. And so just the comparison is incredible, how many volunteers really help us bring our service to life. And then just touching again on that total number of programs in that time period as well. So I wanted to share that data with you as part of our report as well. We added in a special note to this month's commission meeting because we had some exciting news at our Buellton Library. So the Buellton Library was previously located in a shared facility. It was on Highway 246 in Buellton, but it shared the same roof as the council chambers, and it was right next to the post office. And so over the last couple of years, the city of Buellton has been working on renovating this historic property. It's the Willemsen Dairy Farm property. And so from August to February, the library was closed as construction was finalized on this incredible facility, and we celebrated a grand opening in partnership with the city of Buellton on February 8th. We had over 400 attendees. Their mayor and their city manager and their president of the Friends of the Library spoke, and the looks of joy on the community's face when they walked into their brand new library, very aptly in a renovated home, because you kind of feel like, oh, this is my new library home. And it's located right in a neighborhood. So for many of us, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. So we wanted to congratulate the team on their opening of the new facility. We're looking forward to all that will be able to be brought to the community in Buellton through that library. And then a snapshot of our grant program. So our Zip Books grant is back in action for anyone who isn't familiar with it. The Zip Books grant is offered or provided through the California State Library. And each year we have submitted an application, and we have fortunately been awarded grant funds through the Zip Books program, I believe since 2018, perhaps even earlier. And so this year we were fortunate enough to receive that application award, or that award again, for a total amount of $15,327 awarded. And the way that the program works is if there's a title that's not owned by the Goleta or San Ynez Valley Libraries, and you have a card with us and your account's in good standing, if we don't own that title, we can purchase it from Amazon and have it sent directly to your home at no cost to you. And then we just ask that you bring it back within 3 months. And then we try to add as many of those Zip Books to the collection as possible. So it's not only a way to increase access to resources, but also to have our patrons really have an active role in developing our collection, which is fantastic. So the program just opened on February 14th, and at the time of writing this report, we'd been open for 1 week, and we'd already received 160 requests. And our Zip Books coordinator provides a weekly update, and so at the time, it was over 2,500 had been expended, and last Friday, it was over 3,000. So we're definitely receiving a lot of positive feedback. Our community loves this program, and we're excited to be able to implement it again this year. And then lastly, at each of our commission meetings, we provide an update on the Building Forward program that you received a partial update to. This was one of our significant updates about the project. And then we also provide an update on our services plan. So typically, we'll just provide some updates within this section, but this meeting provides two separate staff reports to really go over that in detail. So we received one of them already, and then following this report, we will receive one that's specifically about the services that, that the community can expect to see in the coming months. And this provides a little overview. So in addition to that service plan, we do have one other update. That the nature of the construction project that was shared in our earlier report, that construction does require a full closure of the library. It was determined last fall that due to the type of work that's being performed, you know, moving load-bearing walls, really getting deep into the infrastructure of the building didn't allow for us to do a phased approach or for us to remain in the building during construction. And so it does require a full closure. And then during that time, we are going to be relocating to a temporary home where we'll be providing services from an off-site library location. And so we're getting very close to this change beginning to take effect. Our last day of service at Fairview will be Sunday, March 30th. And our anticipated closure length is going to be approximately 18 to 24 months. And so to give the community a sense of what to expect, from April to June, we'll be relocating. And so that period accounts for us packing up materials at Fairview, a moving company who will be relocating the materials to the temporary site, and then us unpacking and setting up for service in that temporary site and then reopening. So that period accounts for the full move from one site to the other. And then we're looking at a tentative opening date in early June 2025. And we'll next be discussing some of the programming and services that we have in mind during that time. So these are the next steps that are getting close on the horizon. And it's very important for us to make sure that we're sharing the latest information with the community. We know there's a lot of changes, and it can be a lot of different dates and phases to keep up with. And so we created a project page on our website that's right on the homepage. And so that's a way for us to have a central location where you can see all of the latest information. You'll be able to access calendars and schedules of events, and just to learn more about the project for anyone who's interested in that as well. And that concludes the report. Are there any questions?
All right, thank you for that report. I'll ask our commission, is there any questions at this time? Or comments?
Well, I just appreciate the detail of this report. I also think the data is really interesting and exciting. So it is really fun to see how many people from the community are engaging with the library and library programming, and then 160 requests and zip books. That's fun. Maybe a little bit stressful as you're thinking about transitioning out of our current location, and now you have all these extra books in flux, but I really appreciate you continuing to move forward with that program even during a time of transition. I think that's really great for the community, so thank you.
Yeah, I also would say I'm looking forward to all this in a kind of, I'm looking forward to all of this in a, you know, mixture of kind of anxiety and anticipation. I was talking to a friend just today who was saying, yeah, okay, I'm so glad about the library coming out temporarily to this spot over here near us, just kind of the block over. I feel that same way. I love our Goleta building, but I am also kind of excited to see what the transition time will look like. And I know it's a huge headache for you guys, but I'm so impressed. It was somewhere in the notes, but the list of all the existing programming and where you found alternate locations for it, I thought that was very impressive. So congratulations to you guys for doing such good work during this time.
All right. Thank you for those comments. I'll echo just the appreciation for our library, especially I want to highlight just the pride I have that we've made so many staffing updates and additions and continuing the staffing cycle amidst all this transition. That's a lot of work as well. So thank you for doing that. I'll ask at this time if there's any public comment or question on this item.
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak to this item, please use the raise your hand icon. I see no public comment.
And commissioners, before you leave this item, I just wanted to echo how much we appreciate Mrs. Saucedo and her team. It has been a crazy 2025 since that calendar page turned. And not only were we able to support our Buellton team in rushing to get open, we didn't receive the keys until the week before Christmas, and there were still a number of outstanding items to be accomplished. And the city of Buellton made it happen, and our team jumped in there, and they worked almost around the clock to get that place open, and it is beautiful. So we would encourage you to check it out and go home to the Buellton Library for just a day or so. It is a gorgeous location. In addition to that, the project team that you saw earlier here today, as well as Mrs. Saucedo, some behind the scenes, Mrs. Satchwell, if you recall, Diane Satchwell has been helping us still behind the scenes from our home in Bishop. Ms. Ling and the whole library team really putting in a lot of hours and time and effort. And our children's librarian, our branch supervisor, everybody is really looking at our patrons and trying to see, as you mentioned, where we can put things, as well as remaining extremely positive and supportive and looking at that end result in some of the photos that you saw tonight. This is what we get to go back to, so it's really easy to transition out and find an alternative temporary location while we know what we're going back home to. So that's really exciting, and I just wanted to share that between all the people that were here this evening, Mrs. Saucedo, Ms. Sling, all the staff of the library, to include even our new staff have jumped in there with both feet. It's been an incredible transition period, and they have been doing a fantastic job. So I just wanted to echo your gratitude to them.
All right, thank you. Now we will move on to item C2, updates on library services during construction.
All right, thank you everyone for your kind words and support. We sincerely appreciate it. And I'm excited to share our final agenda item this evening, C2. This is an update on our library services that we have planned during construction. We have been taking a very close look at our programming and looking at our calendar really through the end of the year. We typically have our programming divided up into different phases throughout the year. And so in the phases that we've shared in our report this evening, you'll see it's very similar to sort of a tempo that we follow traditionally. But in order to roll out programming to the community, we've aligned it with the MOVE project and with our reopening. And so I wanted to share, first of all, sort of the structure of how programming is being designed and a little bit about the reasoning behind that. So as I mentioned, you know, our MOVE transition will be taking place from April to early June. But it's very important to us to keep those service levels high, that even as the library is transitioning from one location to another, we don't want to have a total, halt to our library programming. And so you'll notice that we have programming developed first on a schedule from April through June. And so we do have a programming plan that will be a lighter programming plan than we may be used to, but does still really try to reach each of our very popular programs that are very highly attended frequently. And so, and sort of going back to something I mentioned in the City Librarian's report, is that we do definitely try to listen to our communities and take feedback into our decision-making process. And so you'll notice we have a calendar developed April through June, where we have programming that's on a weekly cycle, such as our story times, which will be taking place in various parks and open spaces in our local area. We've also received an incredible amount of support from our neighbor division in the Neighborhood Services Department, Parks and Recreation. Under Parks and Recreation is management of the Goleta Community Center, and they have been incredible partners in allowing us to book classrooms at the community center that fit almost perfectly for our programming. And so, for example, the nursery rhyme dance time class, there's a classroom at the Goleta Community Center that is a dance studio that has the safe flooring and it has mirrors. And so we have an incredible volunteer, who Sean Lynn Crawford, who is the director of Inspire Dance Santa Barbara. And she volunteers to teach a monthly toddler dance class, which is just as adventurous and incredible as it sounds. And so we wanted to really keep that music and movement program offering alive and well during our transition. And so that's something that we'll be able to continue at the Goleta Community Center. And so we're excited to still be able to offer that kind of very important early literacy and early development library program in partnership with the Goleta Community Center. We've also been able to identify locations at the community center for our senior happy hour program, which is monthly, our Goodland Yarn Works program, which is weekly. Goodland Yarn Works is an incredible group who knits and crochets items for charity. It's also an incredibly active social community where there's a lot of wonderful engagement and laughter and camaraderie among the attendees of this group. And so we're excited to be able to continue offering that program as well. We have some very popular adult programs. Our Mystery Book Club and our Writers Workshop have a very strong following, and so we'll be able to continue offering those as well. And we received a really great partnership request, an opportunity from UCSB. So we've been working with their library on the UCSB Reads program to coordinate a poetry event, which we have discovered we have a very avid poetry community at the library. And so when they reached out, we were excited to be able to identify this collaboration opportunity so early on. That's something that we've been exploring in our discussions about programs and services during construction, that there are a lot of opportunities for collaborations that we maybe have always wanted to pursue but haven't had the opportunity to do so. And so to see something, you know, the first month of our sort of new tempo, to be able to have one of those partnership opportunities arise, we were really thrilled to pursue that. So more information will be coming later this week. I'm actually continuing to meet to iron out the details. So more information will be coming soon with regards to our collaborations with UCSB. We're also hearing from our patrons and from our staff that there's an interest in additional book van stops. And so we are giving that exploration, and information will be shared as that becomes more defined. And then this period of time from April to June is a very special time for our youth services program team in particular, because we're planning our summer reading program. And so our children's librarian will be doing the annual summer reading tour, as we call it, where we visit all of the different classrooms and all of the different schools in the local area, and we share what the summer reading program is, why it's important, what you have to look forward to. So we will be doing our classic outreach visit schedule during that time, as well as bringing in our teen volunteers. So last summer we had a record-breaking, I think it was 70 teen volunteers between June and July. It was incredible. And so we are definitely going to be reaching back out to our teens in the local area. Teens age 14 to 17 can volunteer at the library. They really bring the program to life, mm-hmm. because there are summer reading listeners, so they engage with the younger readers, mm-hmm. and really promote, you know, reading as a lifelong habit, something that's exciting, something that, you know, the older kids are also doing, so they model and encourage that good reading. And so this is really in alignment with, from April to June, it's in alignment with our packing plan and our programming plan, because we are able to dedicate some efforts to outreach while our staff are also going to be on-site packing materials for relocation. And then it also aligns with our summer reading program and bringing in our teens. And so we're looking at finalizing the details and releasing our calendar for April to June later this month. And then as we get later into the year, we'll be releasing our summer schedule. So there will be sort of a phased release of our calendar of programming. And so from June to July, you'll notice that many of the programs are continuing. And then we'll also be adding a few additional programs. So during the move period from April to June, It will be necessary for our volunteer opportunities to briefly be on pause. And so that will include some of our volunteer-led programming, such as our tech tutoring and our after-school homework help. And so we'll be excited to bring those back in the summer once we're reopened. So we'll expand our programming in that regard, and then also be rolling out our full summer reading schedule. And so the summer calendar will be coming out around the end of May. And so the summer reading program, for anyone who may be new, it includes a variety of different programs that center around a theme. The theme for this year's program is Level Up at Your Library. It's a gaming theme, which we're really excited about. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at having performers. So we have magicians, we have sometimes we have musicians who come and provide concerts for children. We have really engaging activities. We've had jugglers, we've had bubble performers, we've had hula hoop dancers. So it's a really wonderful way to introduce our younger learners to different hobbies and interests and skills that really expand their minds and interests, all focused around learning and reading and discovering. And this is also one of our very popular reading incentive programs. So there will be opportunities for participants of all ages to earn incentives throughout the program too. And so after our summer, we anticipate really wanting to take time to find our stride with regards to operating out of a temporary location and really looking at our services and if there's any ways we can fine-tune some of our approaches. So for example, if our, you know, if our senior happy hour attendees are saying, this is fantastic, but let's see, maybe we could do two a month. We're gonna really listen to our community and we're going to do an assessment period in August. So we'll still have programming in August, but it may be rolled back a little bit to allow for that much needed assessment period where we see what are we totally hitting the mark on, what's something new we want to try in the fall, how did the summer reading program go, and just sort of do a check-in in August and then dive into our fall programming. And what we have in mind for our fall and winter programming is that in some of those conversations we've had about really increasing our collaborations, taking outreach to pockets of the community we haven't been able to reach before, we've really identified the fall and winter as the opportunity when we can dive a little bit more deeply into that level of engagement. And so we'll be releasing our fall programming calendar in August. And so we'll definitely be releasing information as it's available and kind of doing that on a phased approach throughout the end of the year. And so we're definitely putting our heads together with the team. We've been asking our staff, you know, what's a program you've always wanted to do? What's something that you've always wanted to try? Maybe this is the time when we can finally, you know, try that Dungeons and Dragons club that we've always wanted to start at the library. Or is there a new type of collaboration? You know, we've had requests for, you know, presence at the farmer's market. We've had requests for visits to Encina Royale and Maravilla. And we want to be able to, you know, explore some of those opportunities. So more to come towards the end of the year. We're allowing, you know, opportunities for staff to still explore those ideas and share them now as we work on packing and moving, and then as we work on our summer reading and rolling out service, and then sort of getting ready to put those pieces into place towards the end of the year. So I wanted to take the time to share this program plan with you. And also to just let you know that we, you know, want to be able to ask for input and advisement on any of these and to share and keep our commission updated, and that we'll continue to do so throughout the progress, throughout the process, and that our, you know, our communications will be remaining ongoing as this evolves with other groups, you know, such as the Goleta Union School District and some of our other community partners. So that concludes our official report, and so I turn it over for feedback. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much for that update. Really appreciate all the dedicated specifics that we have on paper already. I'll ask our commission if there's any questions or comments at this time.
Is the kind of art gallery space, is that, who runs the programming there for like the artwork displays, and how is the thing gonna affect that?
Thank you for that question, Commissioner Rodkey. So the gallery space at Goleta Valley Library is a reservation that groups can book through our reservation process to display on a month-long basis. And so we have received questions from a couple of our very regular groups who reserve and display, such as the Goleta Valley Art Association, who has a beautiful display this month, actually. I was at the library earlier today and was admiring it. And so they've reached out to us, and they have asked, you know, is there a dedicated gallery space in our temporary location? Unfortunately, that's something that we won't have the wall space or the capacity for. Mm-hmm. And so we have referred those groups over to our team at the Goleta Community Center. Mm-hmm. They're in the process of looking at different policies, looking at different procedures to see if they can develop a booking process because there is an opportunity there to explore that partnership with our Parks and Recreation Division at the Goleta Community Center. So more information will be coming on that, you know, in the weeks and months to come. But it's a great sort of example of the teamwork at the city and in our department. Very much thanks to Ms. Plummer's leadership that we're all working together, trying to really provide that quality service. And so that that continued relationship with our gallery bookings and the different art groups in the community, we wanted to make sure that no one was left behind. And so mm-hmm. we're exploring what that opportunity might look like.
Mm-hmm. All right. Are there any other comments or questions at this time? I'll just say again, thank you for this detailed update on services during construction. And yeah, proud of the work you're all doing.
Commissioner Aguilar, we will need a vote on, apologies, Commissioner Aguilar. Are there any members of the public wishing to speak to this item? I see no public comment, Commissioner Aguilar. And the Library Advisory Commission will need to vote on accepting this past updates on library services during construction.
Got it. Okay. Is there a motion present on this update to programs and services?
I move to accept the update on programs and services.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All right, we have the motion and the second. Is there any public comment on this motion?
I see no public comment, but if there's any members of public wishing to speak to this motion, please use the raise your hand icon at this time. I see no public comment, Commissioner Aguilar.
All right, I will ask for a vote.
Commissioner Aguilar?
Yes.
Commissioner Jordan?
Yes.
Commissioner Rodkey?
Yes.
All right, thank you. That motion passes. And now we can move on to Section D, Commissioner Comments. If there's any extra comments that commissioners need to share at this time? I'll keep my comments brief. Just welcome to both of you all. Thanks for joining the commission. Yeah, appreciate your time.
Thanks.
And with that, I will adjourn this meeting.
Thank you.
At 7:17 p.m.